Hi there, I'm Greg from Kapow. Visit us at kapow.com to check out our unique collection of everyday reusable products designed to help you do more with less. C-U-P-P-O-W.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. On time. You may call in your questions too, 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Joined in the studio, as usual, with Nastasia and Hammer Lopez. We got, you can say anything?
Hi.
All right. We got J-Mall Jackie Molecules, Jack Inslee back in the engineering booth today.
Whoa, there we go. Mike wasn't working. I'm back.
Yeah. And where'd you go?
Should I tell this story now? This is actually a really good story.
Yeah, well, then wait, because you gotta wait till the show's over if you want to tell an actual good story. And we also got Rebecca on the mic, who is what's your title there, Rebecca?
Captain of social media.
Captain, huh? Stas, is that your idea?
I like that. No, but I like
Rebecca, that's you, Captain?
Yeah, I just made it up.
So, like, then who's Tennille? Is Jack Tennille? My Tennille?
Oh, a good show name is Captain and Chenille, and she's, like, making quilts and stuff.
Oh, that's very strong. Yeah. Is that yours?
No, somebody else's.
Yeah, Captain and Chenille, but he's making the quilts.
Right, yeah, that's true. He's
the
making
captain.
The quilts.
Yeah, the captain. Is he alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Wait, is that a call? We got a call, or is that just like someone ordering pizza?
One second, Dave.
Yeah. Anyway.
So we've got two callers on the line. I'm going to make them wait real quick so I can get this story out of the way.
All right.
So I was flown out to Madison by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board to go on a cheese tour, some cheesemaking facilities. They are a supporter of Heritage Radio. So I decided with an extra day in town to go drive over to Milwaukee. Just to check it out. So I drive to Milwaukee. I kind of do my research, see what the best bar is. I go to this bar, Bryant's, which is like a Prohibition era bar that has like a 500 drink menu. You can't order. You just tell them what kind of spirit you like. They make you a drink. They won't tell you what's in it, that kind of thing. I ask the bartender for advice, and he's like, oh, you should go check out this red light ramen thing. It starts at 11:30. So 11:30 at night, I wait in line to go for ramen. The bartender finds me, and he goes, oh, man, I got to bring you to the front of the line. So he introduces me to the chef. This place is called Ardent by day and then Red Light Ramen at night. And the chef, Justin, is like, holy shit, you're Jack in the Booth from Cooking Issues.
Oh, nice.
And the whole kitchen, apparently, big supporters, big listeners. He points to a slushy machine. He's like, this is my old-fashioned slushy. I called into the show, and Dave's advice is why this drink is here.
Wow. How was the drink?
It was damn good.
Nice.
I might have had a few too many, but it was damn good.
Awesome.
So lots of Cooking Issues love in Milwaukee. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, major love to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Milwaukee, yeah. Nice place.
Like Justin, Aaron, and Matt, they're all awesome.
I've only spent in my life, and maybe Nastasia is yours as well, four hours of our lives in toto in Milwaukee, but they were a very good 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That was like the same for me. Yeah, it was really in and out, but it was really, really good.
I like it. Milwaukee, nice town.
And then a quick shout out, of course, to Johnny Hunter and all the Underground Meats people that I got to meet in Madison.
You never met them? You met Johnny.
I met Johnny, but I didn't get to meet everybody else. They were all big listeners of Cooking Issues there.
Yeah, they're nice. They got a really cool setup out there, too.
Yeah, the beverage director at Four Quarter, his name's slipping away from me, but a big listener, awesome dude. Just all around great stuff.
Nice.
I got to see them making their black garlic in a crock pot, too.
Yeah, well, Johnny was the one that told me that you can go higher than everyone said on black garlic, and it tastes like a little bit different, but it's like a boat ton faster.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, so he's doing his black garlic at a much higher temperature than other people.
And an old beat up crock pot.
Is there any other kind? I guess they still make crock pot. By the way, we shouldn't keep the caller waiting, but listen, I got to tell you this. There's one of these websites that sells crap on the internet. In fact, they sell, I think, the egg thing, maybe, that Paul gave us. Mm-hmm. But they also sell this thing called, like, Woof Washer 360, which is a hula hoop water that you wash your dogs. But they have a cookbook they sell. Get this. Dump meals.
Oh, yeah, I've
dump.
Seen that.
Dump meals.
Wow.
You just want to dump it in. Dump. Why would you want any meal called dump? I got to go take a dump. It's your meal. Right? Why would you ever want to do that?
Yeah.
Someone should try it, though. It's like, literally, it's what was the recipe that they say on the commercial? It is a pork shoulder, hamburger. Dr. Pepper.
I like that.
Yeah, Dr. Pepper. Which what it is? It peps your brain and peps your butt. Dr. Pepper. So they got the Dr. Pepper and I think barbecue sauce, and you throw it in, but no pre-browning, nothing. Just like an unbrowned pork shoulder in the crock pot. So we're about to take a caller, but before we take the caller, we have joining us now in the studio, Don Lee. Have a seat, gentlemen. Don Lee, cocktail overlord, you say?
Sure.
Accurate, cocktail overlord. And a father, Bill Daly, from Notre Dame, law school Notre Dame, but also, hold on a second, here, Don, have a seat. I don't want to call you the cocktail priest, but you know like all the major players in the cocktail world, and you don't overindulge in the cocktail, but you enjoy the cocktail world, right?
I enjoy it very much.
Yeah,
I try not to overindulge.
Yeah, well, and I've I have seen him many times at Tales of the Cocktail, our yearly debauch down in New Orleans, and I can say firsthand that Father Bill always has control over the situation. But let me take a caller real quick.
All right, before we have two callers. They'll just have to like fight to see who goes first, I guess.
Well, don't you get to pick?
I'd put them both on.
Mm. Oh, they're literally both
they're
on.
Both,
they can
on.
Both hear. Whoa! All right, so start.
Not a cocktail-y question. Maybe right. The other one is.
Well, no, I don't care. We'll take all questions. I mean, you know, Don and Father Bill like to eat, too.
Right on. Mine's a turducken question.
Oh, nice. Okay, go ahead. Where are you from, first of all?
From D.C. My name's Jason.
Hey, Jason.
All right. So last year was maybe like my fourth turducken, and did it roughly along the line of Kenji's method, which is, chicken and duck, and then in the water bath for a few hours, and then fry to render and crisp the duck skin, and then put it in the turkey suit and roast it for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I took the chicken skin off and had some pork and rabbit sausage in there too. So mm-hmm. Anyway, what I'm looking to improve is mostly the texture of the duck skin.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Is it worth taking it out completely and then just, I don't know, using some of the duck fat somewhere else in the thing?
Yeah, I mean, yes. The you're never. I mean, I always do skin. I always do in my internal birds skinless because it's never going to be crisp. Now, look, there are whole cultures that love like a highly rendered, nasty. That's not the way. I don't mean to nasty. Like bird skin. Like think like Hainanese chicken or something like this. It's going to have a rubbery, gooey, gluey, and that's the deal.
Right.
That's what. But most Americans, like I can train myself to love that because that's who I am. Right. I can be like. But the same way that Americans can't stand apples that have different textures from what they're used to, they can't stand poultry skins that have different textures from what they're used to. That's especially the case with duck. Like, especially the case with duck. So I think that pretty much you're going to be hosed unless you could do the old modernist technique of taking a dog brush to the duck and instead of doing the low temp, you could do an actual roast on it, cool it down, then throw it inside the turkey skin. It won't be crunchy anymore, duh, but it won't have the giant fat cap underneath because it will have rendered out a lot of its fat. And if, you know, but otherwise, duck skin is such an amazing thing. Like to do anything evil to it is like harmful to the world in general, I think. Like
just duck cracklings. Put it in your stuffing. Mix it in.
There you go. That's a good one. Render it out and sprinkle it on the salad that you serve with it because that's going to be delicious.
Yep.
Right, salt the.
Yeah. Now, is there any way to get the transglutaminase to glue the duck and the turkey together?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I do it. I mean, even after it's cooked. So you're pre-cooking your duck and then wrapping the turkey body around. By the way, like, listen, just from a technical standpoint, you're overcooking the duck. Now, not as far as an old school European is concerned, but as far as like a modern person is concerned, you're overcooking the duck. Am I right?
No, it was I did it around 140 in the water bath. It was pretty good.
Oh, 60. So you just did a really, really rare chicken.
Yeah, the chicken was you know.
Right.
The chicken was also not overcooked.
Right, no, but the chicken, for most people, that's going to be way under for a chicken is my point. Most people aren't going to want the chicken until it gets up to about 63, but most people are going to want the duck somewhere between 57 and 58, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, by that standard, the duck was probably overcooked a couple of degrees. The chicken might have been under a degree.
It's fine. Look, it's all fine if people like the way it tastes, but my feeling is that the chicken is going to be a little translucent still at that temperature. Is it?
You know, frankly, I don't remember.
I mean, if you can stand a three-stepper, I would make a tube out of the chicken. Do that thing at like 63, 64.
Okay.
And then transglutaminase the outside, and you can do it when it's still warm, wrap the duck around that, do that sucker at like 57, 58. You can do it at 60, 140. It's actually a perfectly good duck, but it's no longer, depends. If you want that really rosy red medium rare duck, then you need to be at 57 for like an hour. But if you want, like, higher temp duck is legitimate, and that's the way that, like, a lot of old school people will cook the duck. They won't have it rare anyway. A lot of old Frenchies don't like really rare duck, in which case, by the way, like, the temperature you're doing, 60, perfectly acceptable. I'm not trying to be a jerk. Like, that's perfectly acceptable. It's just most modern Americans who are serving a duck breast, rosy rare, will want it lower. Right?
But that's
not what you're doing here. So ignore my other advice. And so you can cook that at that temp. I think 63 or 64 is a little high for it, though. Right? So you could do the initial chicken at like 63, or you could just invert them. You could put the duck on the inside.
Sure.
That's another option for you. Anyways, and then, I would cut the duck skin off, and then I would render it out, as Don said. That was Don, by the way, in crackling form. And I've seen Don put away many duck cracklings in my life.
Many.
The many ducks have been slaughtered to not even sate Don's duck crackling.
I converted a vegetarian of, I think, 7 years back to meat cooking duck cracklings in a college dorm. That was John DeBerry.
Yeah. John DeBerry was a vegetarian?
When I met him, he was a vegetarian. Until
beverage
he
director. Momofuku. Yeah.
Can't say no.
Yeah. Anyways, is this helpful at all? Gluing the transglutaminase.
Then can I put it in the fridge before I put the turkey suit on it, or should I do it all warm still and not retherm it before I put the turkey skin on?
Oh, well, okay. So as long as there's no way for product to get into it, it's fine if you cool it down, because if you've cooked it long enough, you've pasteurized everything in the inside of it. I mean, the kind of real danger happens when you have mixtures that can get recontaminated as they're cooling, and then they cool down, or if there's big air gaps or whatnot. But I think you should be fine. If it's all heated all the way through and safe. Like, the super danger, obviously, is like the person who puts cold stuffing into a bird and then shoves said bird in the oven, and it takes like 4 hours for the stuffing to get up to temperature. And by the time that happens, all sorts of nasty enterotoxins have been created that's what you don't want to do. But you're not going to do that. You're going to be fine.
All right, cool.
I like the rabbit sausage.
Can I use duck fat in sausage, or is that going to be just a terrible disaster?
Yes and no. Like, if you're taking a sausage and you're you mean like cube, not like once it's rendered, obviously it's a nightmare, right? Unless it's an emulsified sausage. Are you doing an emulsified sausage?
Well, no. I was going to make a chunky sausage and stuff it in there with all the rest of the meat.
You can add some, but just be aware that if it's been rendered already, that it's going to bleed out like quickly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you're if you're doing a low temp one, you could get away with using other fat. I mean, look, someone on in the Twitter universe over here, like, write back and say that I'm wrong. You've done it 8 billion times and here's how to do it. And Rebecca and Jack can tell me whether anyone chimes in on that one, but that's my feeling. That I've made duck
fat. Josh says don't use duck fat in dry sausage. No bueno.
Yeah. Yeah. I've used portions of duck, I've made like duck hot dogs and stuff, but I usually supplement it with like pork fat, and I'm using unrendered stuff when I go in, or if it's emulsified, you can get away with it, but not in a chunky sitch, I don't think.
Okay,
awesome. Tweet us back and let us know how it works.
Okay, will do.
Cool, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
We used to do an entirely
second caller still there?
Oh, second caller, you were on the air. They left. They hate us so much.
Yeah. It was a long wait.
It was a long wait. It was too long to wait.
That was my fault. I'll take that one.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We used to do a low-temperature turducken, But I think it was a little too low temp for everyone because it was kind of like on the rare side all the way through. The idea when we were doing it was we lined up all the birds in the order they wanted to temperature-wise be cooked to. So turkey wants the highest temp, chicken wants the next highest temp, duck wants the next highest temp. And we threw a squab in, which, by the way, squab delicious, wants the lowest temp. And so like because why stop with turducken? It's just because they don't have squabs, I guess, much in you know, Louisiana. They could. I mean, they have all kind of small game birds. They could be shoving some sort of grouse in the middle. That would be good.
How about a little ortolan in the very center?
Well, that's more French, man. I guess they're French-y, but they're not French.
All right, we got the second caller back.
Second caller, you were on the air.
Hi, Dave. This is Andrew from Pittsburgh.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. Long-time listener. I've got a couple questions. Just stop me if it's too many. First question was, around like 2 or 3 years ago, someone was trying to do the caramelized little pieces that come out of a sweet potato, like those delicious brown pieces.
Right. Oh, the little like
I mean, I ever get back to you with how he figured out how to do it, because I think he did it once but didn't remember how he did it.
Wait, he's trying to harvest the little beads of syrup that get crunchy on the outside of a sweet potato. Is that what we're talking about?
What? Yeah, but he had somehow figured out how to do it in like a pressure cooker, but he'd only done it once and never repeated the results from what I heard. Did that strike a bell at all?
No, my pressure cooker. Like, the one that I go to bed crying about every once in a while is I made a durian caramel in a pressure cooker once by accident and didn't record enough of the information to ever be able to do it again.
Gotcha.
And that – you're making me sad even thinking about it, because, like, if I could have nailed that recipe, like – and that's why you should always write down what you do. But, no, dude, Stas, is that ringing a bell on sweet potatoes? Must have been a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long, long time ago.
But – yeah, I don't know.
I was thinking adding some amylase to it, blending up the sweet potato, and then pressure cooking it. Do you think that could, and then possibly raising the pH to see if you could get, like, just to really jazz up the Maillard on it with that?
Right, but I mean, the crunchy stuff is mainly a sugars thing, right? So the adding the base is, I forget what it's going to do to the sugar, but it's definitely going to up the Maillard if, in fact, it's Maillard that you're shooting right for. And hitting a sweet potato with amylase will increase the sweetness to the detriment of the starch, but I don't know what that'll get for you, except for maybe increasing the yield. I've tried to make sweet potato cocktails by jacking with amylase, and I've never had any luck. Don, you ever had any luck with sweet potato in a cocktail?
Never worked with it in a cocktail.
I tried. Well, in other words, but that's the only amylase thing. I've also tried. I tried once using the kind of endogenous amylase stuff in a sweet potato, doing like the pre-cook, like the long, low pre-cook. Again, I didn't feel like I made them that much sweeter. You know, you can make a carrot a good bit sweeter by cooking it below the pectin softening temperature for a long time. But I never had a lot of luck with a sweet potato perceptively. In other words, I'm sure it did boost the sweetness, but I wasn't like, best sweet potato I've ever made in my whole life. I need to do this all the time. You know what I mean?
When we say sweet potato, though, are we talking like Asian sweet potato?
We're talking American sweet potato here, Don.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like Asian sweet potatoes, you roast it, you know, it turns really sweet. You can even chop it up and deep fry it. It gets nice and crunchy, get a little Maillard on the outside.
Do you like sweet potato fries? Are you one of those people?
Not the yellow American kind of sweet potato fries, but a traditional Korean-Chinese hybrid dish as a dessert is chunks of the kind of the Japanese purple on the outside, white on the inside sweet potato, chunked up, deep fried. Delicious.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here and get everyone mad at me. I can eat sweet potato fries. I like two of them. I tire of them quickly compared to an Irish potato, we'll call it, even though they're not from Ireland. French fry. You know what I mean?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah? Stas? Mm-hmm. Stas hates all French fries. That's it. She doesn't hate them. She's not a fan.
She just needs some champagne to go with them.
Yeah.
Then you'll eat it.
Dave, have you ever dipped in maple syrup?
A healthy and responsible choice compared to regular fries. Because they seem more adult.
Wait, what seems more adult?
I think people order them in restaurants because the sweet potato fry seems like, oh, that's something you would put on an adult dinner plate, sweet potato, as opposed to the French fry.
But aren't you supposed to be, it was Father Bill, aren't you supposed to be, like, optimistic about human nature as opposed to so pessimistic that that's how shallow we all are? I guess they need to be taught. That's why you're a priest.
That's right. Instruct the ignorant. It's a spiritual work of mercy.
Yeah, there you go. Rebecca, what were you saying?
Do you like to eat your sweet potato fries when you dip it in maple syrup? Because that's what I like to do.
I'm sure that's good. Like, you can make a good dessert, I'm sure, with a sweet potato. Here's the problem. Sweet potato fry never has the proper texture of a French fry. And it's got that sweet potato taste, which I find better as a kind of a roasted kind of a situation. Like, I'm not hating on sweet potatoes. I love sweet potatoes. I just don't think the fry is the best. It's like they very rarely have the right kind of crust to interior ratio. They very rarely have the right oil to potato ratio, and there's something deeply not the best about them. I'm going to go on record and prep people everywhere will know what I'm talking about. I detest peeling and cutting sweet potatoes. I hate cutting sweet potatoes. I hate the noise my knife makes when it goes through a sweet potato. I hate the way that, like, they shatter, like, right when you're, like, two-thirds of the way through the freaking sweet potato. There's nothing about fabricating sweet potatoes in the kitchen that I enjoy. Nothing.
That's because you're using yams. Use real sweet potatoes, and it's not a problem.
Whatever, man. You know what? You know what's the worst thing ever? Like, my favorite Nastasia moment right after she started working with us was we had those Naimyo, those, like, long, slimy, like, sweet potato-y things. You know what I'm talking about, Don? Those, yeah. What are they? Nagmo? What are they called?
That you grind up and...
Yeah. They're basically a mucilaginous nightmare. Yeah. And let me just put it this way. Their shape is suggestive. Suggestive. Mm-hmm. And so we had one peeled... It was one of those days when it was mostly dudes in the kitchen that day. And so we peeled one. Nastasi goes to pick it up. It's all slimy. Picks it up, shoots this suggestive thing across the kitchen because she squeezed on the tapered end of it too hard. It hits the wall and shatters into a million pieces. And all the dudes were like, "Oh." Remember that?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'm dropping that last caller.
Rebecca has a follow-up to that.
We have a follow-up. Rebecca's got a follow-up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We had somebody
ask you. What? What's going on?
Hold on. I got to get it. I'm sorry.
All right.
So Sean Andrews wants to know, how do you make the sweet potato fries crispy like you were talking about, and could you do it in the oven?
I'm going to say I haven't worked on it enough to know because... Like, to take on a problem, I have to love the problem. Do you know what I mean? Like, now this is a good problem, like, in the sense that, like, I understand what you're trying to say. Was that Andrew wrote in? Look, I understand what you're trying to say. What you're trying to say is, hey, look, there is something to salvage, right? There is something savable, as Father Bill might say, in the sweet potato French fry. I haven't seen a glimmer of it enough to devote the time and energy necessary to actually suss that out and figure out whether that is really there. There's a couple of problems. Generally, things that are deep fried, certain exceptions, donuts, blah, 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 don't want to be as sweet as that because you can't get the crust formation without burning the sugars involved, right? So you're going to have a very high percentage of sugar on the exterior, but you not only need to cook it to a brown, which, Bev, you know, trivial. You could do that with – but you need to dehydrate it to the point where you actually have a good texture. So what I would do if I was going to do it – and I didn't talk about my lays. By the way, I'm turning – as I get older, I get lazier and lazier and lazier. You know what I do now? On the weekends – first of all, it's going to seem like I'm not talking about the same thing, but I am. So Dax, you know, my younger son Dax, has decided that he is actually a child of the 1970s and so requests baked potato bars as a dinner thing. Yeah, it's good. It's really delicious. And so I've been like slamming like the big baking potatoes out of the oven, you know, prick it with a fork, rub it with oil, salt, throw it in the oven for an hour, like 70s, you know, big pile of fixins to go with it. Strangely, Dax chooses vegetarian chili, but whatever. I'm not going to judge. It's his 70s, you know. You know, I lived the actual 70s, but, you know, whatever. We'll deal with his version of the 70s. And so anyway, I've started just making an extra 5 potatoes when I do it. And if you just take a properly baked regular Irish potato, russet, Burbank, good old-fashioned America, Idaho, and you throw it in the fridge. So remember, baking it, you haven't added any water. You've actually dehydrated it some. You've cooked all the starch out so it's fluffy. You put it in the fridge and let it sit for a day. Now you can cut it properly. That stuff fries up amazingly well, like amazingly well. So, you know, because you've done a lot of the moisture management and pre-cook when it's still in its potato form, And is it as good as my hardcore French fry stuff? No, but I end up just disking it, making home fries. And like that kind of a home fry, I have to say, they're really good. Now, back to your sweet potato problem. Could you do something like that with a sweet potato? Perhaps. Perhaps you could roast a sweet potato whole, chill it, fabricate it, and let it dry, let the outside dry off, like partially dehydrate a little bit, like just in the air, and then fry it. Could you get a good result? I'm not going to say you can't. You know how people get a good result with sweet potatoes, or what they call a good result? They cheat and they batter those suckers, which is why there's so many battered sweet potato products out there, because then you separated the problem of trying to create a crust in an impossible place, the surface of a sweet potato, and you've instead shifted it to, can I make a good crust on the outside? And obviously you can. Obviously that's possible.
I was just going to say, the Japanese sweet potato tempura.
Yeah, delicious. Although, don't get me started on tempura, all right? Have you ever had tempura that was life-changing?
I got to drop that sweet potato call and get to the next guy because we're backed up here.
All right. But have you ever had a good tempura? Really good?
I still haven't been to that new tempura bar, but like that place that just opened up here.
Here's the thing. They're like, well, you know, you need to have it right away. No, why? No. It's just no. Tempura is delicious, but is it the height of frying? It is not.
It's the height of tempura.
It's height of tempura. It's its own thing. But I'm never, in other words, like that, like that, like the kind of Japanese ideal of like the incredibly blonde, non-browned crust that's good for exactly the amount of time. So like most, and I've had good tempura, most of it, by the time it's cold enough to eat, with like it's already crap. You know what I mean? Anyway, we have a caller. Do we have a caller? No.
What if you did a shoestring sweet potato?
Hard to fabricate. That's what I'm saying. Like shoestrings are so hard to fabricate. You could probably pulp a sweet potato and then make some sort of like Pringle-esque kind of a situation. Are you a Pringles fan?
Sure.
Yeah.
Once you pop, you can't stop.
Oh wow, that's true. What about you, Don? Pringles?
I like using the can to make a cantenna.
What's a cantenna? What's a cantenna?
It's a Wi-Fi range extender.
Holy crap, Don. Don is his own Mophie. He plugs his phone into his forehead when he runs out of battery juice. What about you, Stas? Pringles? You know what I don't like about the Pringle? I like them. They're good. The texture. There's something about the texture, like scraping on the roof of my mouth. There's something about the texture.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They're good. I like them. And, you know, that was one of the most fantastically expensive things ever in terms of food R&D. I think it was Procter & Gamble came up with the patents on it, and it took forever. Whatever.
Do we still have the caller that's been waiting?
I don't know.
Ooh. Caller?
Caller, are you on the air? No. Okay.
That's me.
You're here.
This is Andrew Shaw. I was just going to say thank you, guys.
Hey, thanks.
There's one thing that I could ask. Eggnog's amazing. I love it. But I was trying to figure out how to get a foam on top. Do you think methyl salicylate 50?
Wait, for a foam on top of what? I couldn't hear you.
For eggnog. So it's one of my favorite parts about winter is being able to drink eggnog. And I also love egg white drinks. So I was trying to think of a way. I don't know. I don't think egg whites would work on top of eggnog. I could be wrong, but I was thinking maybe methyl salicylate 50 to have a foam to go on top of an eggnog or some other kind of hot drink.
Yeah, you could totally do it. I mean, what do you want the foam to taste like?
What do I want the foam to taste like? I mean, I would imagine if you could get the foam done, you could probably get it to taste like anything. I mean, I was thinking maybe you do like either a cinnamon or like a nutmeg simple and then get that to foam, or I could be wrong on that.
You want some solids. Else. You need some whipping. You need some crap in the – so methylcell F50 is it's going to provide the kind of structure, but you need some solids in there to back it up. Like things like purees work really well, or – you know, something that has some structure, some like stuff in it, like clear things like simple syrups aren't going to whip up so well. Methylcell F50 may or may not work with actual milk products because they can be kind of a nightmare.
You could also just whip the eggnog.
Does it hold?
Long enough for you to finish the drink. I mean, if it's not holding long enough for you to finish the drink, you're not drinking fast enough.
You could also do like a hot ISI foam on the with an eggnog base and just thicken it with something like – if you want it to stay forever, you could make an agar fluid gel from the eggnog base. You know, hydrate the agar in water, temper back in the eggnog base, blend the hell out of that, and then shoot it out of an ISI. That'll hold hot up to about 70 degrees Celsius, and then – and then that'll hold till forever.
But can you hold that for service in an ISI in like a circulator bath?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you want like hyper dense on that, like
along with the eggnog.
What? What do you say?
What temperature would you hold that during service? Can you hold eggnog during service, like in a circulator bath?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and then what temperature would you like 57?
What? Yeah, you just don't want to mess with the eggs, right? So anything below 57, I think you'll be fine. I don't think it's gonna. How much
more Tom and Jerry though? If you want a like a hot egg drink, that's a Tom and Jerry. If you want a cold drink, that's an eggnog.
I'd run a little test on. Listen, cocktail purist over here.
Listen, Mister, I don't want to make a hot and cold cocktail at the same time because that's not real mixology.
Oh, no. You know what? Now he's getting me started. Listen, to get back to this. You want a test to make sure that nothing's going to break or curdle, but the egg should stabilize it up to. You should be fine up to 57. You should be fine. You probably are right all the way up to 60, in which case, if the health inspectors come in, you're not going to get in trouble.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. And I guess I'm just wrong on the eggnog versus. What did you say the name was?
It's called a Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry. Okay.
Don just has to be, prickly over here. You know what I mean? All right.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to break real quick.
All right. Coming back with some more cooking issues.
Americans throw away 58 billion disposable cups every year. A lot of those cups will still be around long after you're dead. Kind of dark, I know, but I'm Greg from Kapow, and we decided to do something about it. We created the only glass travel mug that's 100% US made. You can check it out alongside our complete line of everyday reusables at kapow.com, CUPPOW.com.
This is not an advertisement. I promise, this is not an ad. Cooking Issues listener, you're already cooler than most people for listening to this show. And if you do listen to this show, then you know I'm Jack Inslee, a.k.a. Jackie Molecules, a.k.a. the man behind the booth. I need you to make us look cool against all the other shows. Let's make Cooking Issues the most supported show on the network. $1, $5, $20, $50, really, anything you can afford, please donate today to heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the Donate tab in the top right corner. Send us a note and let us know you came from Cooking Issues. Dave will appreciate it. I will appreciate it. Even Nastasia will appreciate it. I promise. Give something today.
Hello, and welcome back to Cooking Issues. How you guys doing? So, Jack,
lots going on back here.
Did you have any...
So many. Yeah, Cooking Issues listeners are coming through.
All right. Ready? Caller, you were on the air.
Oh, no. That was for donations.
Oh, for donations.
Yeah, no, I don't have callers. I have donations, though.
We have me all geared up.
Yeah, well, geared up for donations.
They should donate.
Hey, one more favor for Cooking Issues fans. Like us on Facebook for Heritage Radio Network. We got to up those numbers. So, like us on Facebook. I'm done.
All right. So, is there anything in particular you gents want to discuss? Just here to weigh in?
Not particularly. Just thought we'd come crash your show. Bill's in town.
Nice. Yeah. Anyway, again, so Don Lee, overlord of the cocktail world. And Father Bill, pretty much the spiritual guide for the cocktail world. What kind of law do you actually do?
I'm the Sherpa to the Sherpa. I teach legal ethics. I teach philosophy of law.
You're for it?
Most of the time.
Legal ethics? You're pro?
As with most people in ethics, I'm for it for others.
Okay. Did you get to see the Pope when he came through?
I did not. I was stuck in the Midwest.
Mm. Yes. Okay, questions in. Hello, people. I was watching a series of videos about portioning and freezing food. In a video, the demonstrator was using 2 mil polyfill rolls and an impulse sealer and then freezing. Obviously, this is faster and way cheaper than vac sealing, but is this person shafting themselves by not removing air? Michael from Toronto. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, are you going to, like, in the short term, you're fine. Like, removing air, the problem is this. If there's any space between your bag and the product that you're freezing, you're going to, as your product kind of goes through the cycles of up and down in your freezer, you're going to get recrystallization at the surface, and you're going to get freezer burn on the surface of that product. There's also, you know, even though you're in a freezer, there's potential oxidation reactions that can happen. So you really want to get rid of the air. Look. If you want to have it, like, let's say you're a prepper and you want to have a delicious steak, you have what are those things called, solar cells, so that your freezer is going to stay good even when the grid goes down, and you know you've run out of shotgun shells, so you can't shoot anybody or anything left, but your freezer is still running. You're going to want your stuff vacced down so that it stays in good condition, because 20 years after it all happens, you know, when no more plants or anything grows, you know, you'll be glad that you took the time to get the air out. If you want to use Ziplocs, you can do the old school, like, you can get most of the air out doing a water fill where you dip the bag under the water and then you close it and the water will exclude the air. If you go on the Cooking Issues old blog, the pictures are still there showing you how to do it. And another technique that you can do, makes you look really dumb, is you can stick a drinking straw into the edge of a Ziploc, seal all the way up to the Ziploc, and then pinch and pull the straw out, and then, you know, that'll also get rid of some of the air. That's actually what I do for baked goods. You don't want to vacuum baked goods down because it crushes the baked goods. And they're too light. They float, so it's hard to do the water exclusion on a baked good. So when I'm freezing down things like pancakes and muffins, I do the straw on the Zippy. That's my trick.
That reminds me of – have you seen the movie The Martian yet?
No. Is it good?
It's right up your alley. But one of the ideas is that while the main character is stuck on Mars, he has to, you know, create some kind of food. And he has these potatoes because they send him up there with potatoes as part of a Thanksgiving dinner. But if you're actually going to space, you'd probably send cooked potatoes backpacked, right? You probably wouldn't send raw potatoes up there.
I don't think you would send raw potatoes up there. Yeah. I don't think no, but I mean, like, if you were actually going to go up for a long time, you'd need a food production unit anyway. It would probably be algae-based.
Well, they were sent with just prepackaged kind of MRE-style food for everything else.
Then that potato – look, let me tell you something right now. I don't know. On NPR, I heard someone say that, like, a bunch of NASA people love the movie, so, like, they're not going to nitpick. But I know for a fact one thing that you're not going to send up on is something that might have a pathogen on it. So I would bet that they cook the hell out of everything that goes up on those birds, because, you know the HACCP, the system, was designed for a space program, right? Because you need to analyze every possible hazard, because you don't want, like, an astronaut to get the runs in space or have, like, food poisoning in space, because it's potentially a problem. There's nowhere they can land.
Right.
So, you know, the food the food system that was developed for the space program was meant to have the same checks and balances for safety that the physical space vehicles had, right? Everything redundant, everything checked, everything verified, everything logged, so that in the event of a problem, they could trace it back, etc. Hence, HACCP was born. And so my guess is that a raw potato in the food supply would be a no-love kind of a situation, because it might potentially be contaminated.
Right. Well, the idea, I think, there was that they take it up there and microwave it before they eat it.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, I just don't believe it. I mean, look, someone from NASA write in and say that you know, look, I'm sure these guys looked into this, and whoever wrote the book, because it was a book before it was a movie,
remember if you dealt with it in the book or not. Do you remember, Don?
So the idea was that normally they wouldn't take anything like that up there, but because they would be spending Thanksgiving there, they sent this special package that happened to include potatoes, which is why he was able to grow something there.
So let me get this straight. So you're in a space program that is costing billions of dollars with a bunch of lives at stake, and you wouldn't ordinarily do something for safety reasons. However, you did it because it's Thanksgiving. I don't know.
Isn't that like 2/3 of your show?
I guess.
Things you've done because it's Thanksgiving.
Yes, and my life in general. You could have a large portion of my life just be called dumb things I've done. But look, I haven't seen the movie, nor have I seen the book, nor have I ever consulted with NASA in any way, shape, or form on any sort of food thing. So, like, I could be 100% wrong.
Yeah, you should check out also. There's a video that the guys from Tested.com.
they went out to NASA to kind of see how they do the food stuff, and they worked on a project with Tracy Desjardins, the chef in San Francisco, using only the ingredients of things that are already prepackaged on the ISS. What could you create that's new? And they came up with like a space burrito, and then Chris Hadfield actually made a space burrito in on the ISS.
How was it?
He said it was tasty.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's great.
What are the wrap? Oh my God, I had a wrap the other day. I ordered a freaking sandwich, and it came as a wrap, and I was already out of the damn place before I realized I'd ordered a wrap. It was everything horrible that I thought it was.
Did you set the place on fire?
I have not yet been back to set the place on fire. However, I probably will. And I was like, maybe they cooked the freaking tortilla before they wrapped. Oh no, they didn't, raw flour. No. Oh!
Hey Dave, I've got two questions.
Yes.
So this one's from Timmy. Any updates on future equipment? I need a Christmas list. And the second question is from Nastasia, who has Christmas lists?
Oh man, Stas, you're such a
grown man. Our fans are man children.
Man, damn.
Christmas list.
Ouch, man. Why do you hate on the Christmas list? Listen, Stas. Oh, so you're such. Give me this crap. Listen,
Christmas list for yourself.
Listen, you know what people do? They say to me, they say, "What would you like for Christmas?" Because you're impossible to buy stuff for.
But do you make a list?
He checks it twice.
Yeah. Right.
If you name two things, you've made a Christmas list.
Oh! Father Bill busting you wide open there, Stas.
No.
Yes, if you say to people, here is some things that I would like, that is a list.
Oh, okay.
What Stas is saying is she doesn't want you sitting down with a magic marker, because that's what you'd be using in the situation.
A colored magic marker.
A colored magic marker. Hopefully it smells like grape or lemon. Those are my two favorites. Orange is my distant third.
Yep.
In there. Yeah. And
on construction paper.
Yeah, some construction paper and writing down the list. That's what she's reacting to. But like, you know, Stas, like, here's what I want for Christmas. That's not a list?
No. I mean, I don't consciously make a list. No.
Dave's is on BuzzFeed. Someone asked Dave Arnold what he wants for Christmas. Really? I believe what happened next.
Oh, man.
I stand by Tim, by the way. It's okay to ask for something for Christmas.
It totally is okay to ask for something, because you know what? If you don't ask, you know what you get? Some crap you don't want. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Get a shitty sweater.
My problem is that most of the stuff that I want is so specific that I take all the fun out of it for the buyer. So I'm not like, you know what I need? I need a knife. I'm like, no, there is a knife that I need. You know what I mean? Like, and you can only buy it in this one place on a Thursday from this one lady.
Stockholm.
I mean?
Yeah, but see, you're like me in that this concept of shopping doesn't make sense. You research and then you acquire. You research and then you acquire. You don't go and shop. You know, you don't go to a store and like, what do I need or want, right? It's, you know what you need.
Yeah.
Figure it out, and then you get it.
Yeah, I'll spend like 5 hours figuring out the exact style of crap I want. It's like my wife. She's like, hey, Dave, we might have like a power outage, so I'm going to buy some flashlights. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. No, you don't just buy a flashlight. You go on the Candle Powers forum. You see what the current technology is right now.
Wow.
Check out the 4/7 website.
Wow. Get some headlamps first.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
So are there plans for future equipment?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Stas, you want to talk about this after you've insulted the person who asked for our stuff?
It's the same as we said last week. We're going to let them know when it's ready, right?
Okay. Woo. Stas.
Isn't that...
This is why we call her the Hammer, folks. You're getting...
Ooh, yeah.
For some reason, I don't know why the real Stas is actually coming out on the radio, which it normally never does. So this is like the actual way Nastasia treats people.
Father Bill's
awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I have your caller on the line, too.
All right, let me say this. So, we plan... Our plan... is on Black Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving. Nastasia and I are going to ruin another Thanksgiving. We're going to announce what product we're going to sell, and we're going to put it on pre-sale.
You're not going to wait for Cyber Monday?
No.
It's on the internet, man.
I know. It's so retarded.
We don't believe in the internet, and not a valid term for something that you don't like.
Shout out to David Tassinari with a donation in real time.
Oh, nice real time. Anyway, so my point is that on Black Friday, we'll come out with what we're doing. We don't want to announce anything right now simply because...
we did last week.
Simply because we don't want to... We don't want to say like what the capabilities or anything like are until everything is completely hammered down. But don't buy a centrifuge between now and Christmas, right? And we're not going to deliver it this year, by the way. There's no way on God's earth that we're going to deliver it this year, right, Stas?
Mm-hmm.
That I can say for certain. And are we going to have the cube available?
Yep.
Cube's available. You know who likes the cube? Rebecca.
Yes.
Rebecca, big fan of the cube. You know what we should have? We should have a contest for naming the cube. Is there? We don't have a decent name for it, right?
I mean, Rebecca would be the leading name, maybe. Yeah.
You don't name the cube Rebecca. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want to, you know what I named after you? A hunk of polyurethane that I shake around on the inside of two pieces of metal and just beat the ever-loving crap out of in order to froth up a drink.
You said that loving, would, though, so that's okay, I guess.
That would froth up a nice eggnog, though.
Yeah, yes, it would. Yes.
Wow, John in Osaka says Dank Shaker Nugs should be the cube name.
Whoa. Oh, nice. All right, was that a caller I heard coming in or what?
Yeah, I think this is the caller. Here we go.
All right, caller, you were on the air.
This is Jeffrey from Costa Mesa. How you guys doing?
How you doing?
Doing all right. First, just want to say thank you sincerely to all of you there in the studio for the time and work that you put in. And you've inspired us to approach problems, not just cooking problems, but problems in general with greater thought and creativity and enthusiasm. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It's nice. It's really nice.
Yeah. I have a question about another, since we're talking potatoes. I do a lot of French fries, sometimes just tater tots from those scraps. So do the basic peck and neck soak for the hour, 14-minute blanch, like what you put up on the blog a long time ago. So the problem is maybe I'm just an ogre and I'm not handling things delicately enough, but after the blanch, so many of the fries fall apart that I'm not getting a lot of, you know, whole, nice, long French fries. I'm wondering if I can blanch for a shorter amount of time and do a longer first fry, or what would you recommend?
Yes and no. So, like in order to get a nicer looking French fry, you can blanch for less amount of time, but I don't think the texture is going to be quite as good, and you might have to do a little more dehy between the blanch and the first fry to get it right.
Right.
But another thing you could do.
Do the 5/8 cut, so I don't do any forced drying.
Right.
Just throw them onto a drying rack, but that's kind of where it's tough to get them back off into the fry.
Do you have a combi oven?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No.
Because I've had good luck just steaming the ever-loving crap out of them, too. You know what I mean?
Really?
You know what I've never done? I've never done a short blanch. See, the thing about the blanch... So when you're blanching a French fry in water, doing two things. You're cooking the French fry, right? So you're affecting the texture. You're also putting the salt in the inside of the French fry, which is a very important step. I wonder what would happen if you did – I've never tested this. I wonder what would happen if you did a relatively short blanch, right, to get the salt penetration that you need, pull it out, put them on racks, and then just bake them in a regular oven for a while to do like the overcooked thing, and then pull them out and let them cool off before you do the fry. I wonder what would happen.
That'd be worth a shot.
I think it might be good.
I was thinking more of a hardware solution. Just take your rack and then dip it into some food grade silicone, make it, you know, nonstick.
You know, it's just really hard. Like, it's just really, really hard when you're dumping these, especially when you're dumping out of water. Like, when you blanch for as long as we normally blanch, like, literally just, even if you were to, like, ladle with a spider out of the pot, they shatter on the spider. They're like, in fact, all the bottom ones get pulped, and the ones on top, like, because they have the cushion of their destroyed brethren underneath them, manage to survive. But,
exactly.
Please, I don't have the time right now to run a bunch of tests, but if because I'm working on this like music bunch of stuff like this centrifuge, the museum. If you try like a shorter blanch and then just like some bake time in the oven and see whether it's good. Let me know.
That's a great idea. I'll try that.
All right.
I have to confess. That's my only question. I have to confess. I was the person who called a few weeks ago with too many questions and initiated Placentagate, so I apologize for that. I did, as a friend said, present myself as a nail upon which magnificent Miss Lopez could hammer. So
yeah, and she does. Now, I don't know if you can hear because you're calling in, but you see the kind of roughness she sprays on people. This is her normal self, people.
Town, but this is what we need. That's what is necessary.
All right, awesome. Well, let us know how the fries work. All right.
Will do.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Hey, I hate to say it, but we're nearing the end here.
What? Because
I got to get you. We got to do a MoFat ad too.
Oh yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Let me see. Hold on a second. unethical, Father Bill would say, for you to not have us talk about these. Oh, wait, here we go. Oh, I don't even know the answer to this. Maybe look, I'm going to throw this out there, and someone – I should know this. Nastasia, are Searsall steak decorators ever going to be available outside of the U.S.?
Steak decorators? No.
Do we still have any on Amazon?
Yeah.
So you could probably convince – because Amazon, they say they won't do everything, but you could probably go on Amazon.us and order it from Amazon.us, and they may or may not ship to you depending on what kind of a mood they're in.
There's also third-party shippers you can send it to.
There you go.
If you Google for it, I'm sure you can find something.
I know Canada does that. Like, they ship a bunch of stuff to the Canadian border, and then you drive to the border and pick it up. But it's also random. I really, really didn't realize how much I would hate how export rules work. What about you, Stas?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a radio broadcast question. Recently, I bought a store-bought lobster bisque. Bisque. What do you think about the word bisque, Stas?
It's fine.
You're okay with it?
Mm-hmm.
Bisque. What about when I say it like that? You don't like biscuits. So maybe I thought you didn't like bisque.
Bisquick?
What about Bisquick?
Fine.
You know who likes Bisquick freaking pancakes? Booker. He's like, can you make – I don't want your pancakes, Dad. I want Bisquick pancakes. I was like, nice. Ain't great. Ain't great. Recently bought lobster bisque at a store, and on its ingredients, it states, in quotes, lobster extract. What is such an extract? Lobster carapace boiled down, or is it an industrial rotavap to use? Best 80 from the UK. I guarantee you they did not use a rotavap. That's for dingity-dangity sure. I bet you they just took all like the stuff left over from lobster and you know, boiled and crushed it. But you know what? We're doing an exhibition on flavor, and I'm sure we'll get some flavorists coming through. All I know is this. Everything that says extract is very finely tweaked. It would not be a rotovap because that would be too expensive and you're not going to get the stuff across. But I'll figure out what it is. I'll try to, next time I speak to an actual flavorist who works on savory side stuff, I'll try to get that. And then the person who called in, Jeremy, about the Christina Tozzi cake recipe with the fondant, it worked. Thanks for the answer. The cake was a huge success. 110 Fahrenheit for the fondant was still a little cool. 115 seemed to work perfectly. I have since made several other recipes from Miss Tozzi's book. All of them were amazing. You guys should have her on the show someday. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
And I have a caller who's going to like squeeze a question in so quickly.
Here we go. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. Nastasia, Jack, nice to see all of you. Nice to talk to all of you. Quick question. Nitrogen in a keg, how long does it take to infuse it into a liquid phase?
Oh, nitrogen will never go in. Nitrous?
No, nitrogen. So when you're like a Guinness style, like head.
Right. So what those guys are doing is, I believe, it's been a long time since I've looked at the widget patent, and Don will know about this. You use nitrogen in beer gases to push without adding extra carbonation, but also injection of nitrogen into the bottom will create seed bubbles that cause the head thing to come up. So what you want to do that is you need an injection at source when it goes down, but it's never going to appreciably solubilize in the drink. But you could make you could get like a carbonating stone, like a sintered stone that was only going to be used on Guinness. Like put it onto a nitrogen hose, and then in the bottom of a thing of Guinness, you could just go, and it would like foam up to the top. I would guess.
But you wouldn't want that in the keg.
Okay.
You'd want that outside. So.
It couldn't be in the keg. It would have to be outside the keg. I don't think there's a way. You could put something that would cause a boat ton of foam to happen in your beer lines, but it would wreck your beer lines for like a glass. So in other words, here's what you could do. How about this, Don? I don't think anyone's ever done this. Ready for this? You could have a regular beer line, right, that you left clear, and then you could emulate the beginning and end of a keg where it gets like air interruption in it with nitrogen and have a separate line that's just like crappy foam.
Yeah, that would work.
Where you're pushing, where you reverse the push, where the air push that goes in actually goes in at the bottom through a carb stone. So every time you're pushing, it's like you're pushing from a new keg. And then you would have a you'd pull your normal beer without like making it nice, and then you go and just pour foam out of your foam line.
What would you do?
What if you just took the end of the tap basically and just like kind of ran like a steel wool inside just to create more surface area to create more nucleation sites?
Oh, that's a good idea without having to have a separate thing on the inside of the keg.
Super easy, yeah.
Or Or you could really – you could also just put like a little nitrogen or air at that point, because who cares? Yeah. It's not staying in contact with the beer more than 5 minutes. Injector right at the tip, right at the flow to just crap it out. You know what I mean? Like almost the way a soda gun craps it out. That's the easiest. There you go.
If you were not serving in like pint glasses and small glasses, you could actually even also just sand the inside of the glass to create more nucleation sites. But you would eventually
then it'll keep nucleating.
Yeah, so you'd have to drink it fast. So if you made small, like, you know, pony glasses, you know.
The real baller thing, right? Check this out. Here's the real baller thing, right? You could have a button on the side of the thing so that you pour it, and then at the end you're like – and it just injects right at the like right in the tip at the end, blasts some air into, cause nucleation sites, and then you could do it all from kind of one tap.
Yeah,
right.
That would work.
Oh, I don't, by the way, Dave, the advice you gave me 3 months ago about the coffee on tap.
Yeah,
perfect.
Oh, nice.
Amazing. Yeah, nice. And it lasts like a month and a half. No mold. No nothing. No worries at all.
Oh, beautiful.
You guys are gonna hate me.
Oh, what? Were you cutting us off?
Yeah.
Or we're being cut off. Thanks for Don, Father Bill. Everyone else, cooking issues.
Red light ramen.